Welcome back to Exceptional Undergrads, a podcast where we interview successful students and explore how they achieved successes at a young age. Be sure to check out our show notes at exceptionalundergrads.com for all resources mentioned in today's episode. Today, I welcome Max Kubicki to the show. Max is a junior at the University of Notre Dame. Originally from Poland, Max was the youngest member of the Imagine Group at Notre Dame, where he worked on molecular simulations for use in large-scale batteries. He's also built a couple startups at Notre Dame, where he currently runs Desynced AI, which uses AI to automate processes for clients, maximizing efficiency. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Max Kubicki.
You can call me Max, but my full name is Maximilian, Maximilian Kubicki. I'm a junior undergrad at Notre Dame. I study chemical engineering, but I also do a lot of non-chemical engineering things. So I last summer was working with the McGinn research group, where we did molecular simulations. I was actually the youngest person on that group. And if we end up publishing a paper like this year, I'll be the youngest person to publish a molecular simulations paper on Earth, which is funny. I also worked with the Notre Dame rocketry team, where we competed in the NASA student launch. We built a rocket that we launched at Huntsville, Alabama. I also ran a startup before that did 3D ski navigation. It was called Skis. I was a full stack developer there, and I quit 13 days ago. To found a new company called Desync AI that does all kinds of AI things, where we leverage AI for our customers, as well as we train like custom fine-tuned small language models. So those would be the main like recent things that I did.
That's awesome, Max. You said beforehand that you're from Poland at some point. Can you enlighten me on this whole entire journey of coming, growing up in Poland, then coming over to the US? I want to hear your perspective, because that's something I've just never even experienced before.
Yeah, so I was born in Poland. It's practically Central Eastern Europe. So we border with Russia and Ukraine. So, nowadays it's a little bit of a hot area, let's call it. I was born there. I lived there 18 years of my life. And then I came to America for university. Why that happened was mainly because my dad has U.S. citizenship. He got it when he escaped Poland during communist times, went to America, got political asylum. And then after 14 years in America, he came back to Poland when the communists were no longer like after him. He always told me and my brother to like go to America and get like university degrees there. He is a big fan of America. So Poland was kind of tough for like going to America for university. In US, there's a lot of prep schools, right? People basically go to schools that are like, the idea is that they'll make you get into like good unis in America. In Poland, like best high schools are public high schools, actually. It's kind of like the reverse, where like bad high schools are the ones where you have to pay for them to be in them in most cases. So in a lot of those public high schools, you have teachers that don't really care in many ways. It's almost like the school's performance is dependent on the fact that like they have a low acceptance rate, so they get good students will do well anyways. That's how, kind of how the level is kept up. And also the grading systems are completely different. So like, I know a lot of people here who came with like a 4.0 GPA, which is unheard of anywhere in Poland to have a 4.0 GPA. Like some professors say you'll never get an A in their class. That like, they know the subject for B, and then God knows it for an A, right? Like, actual quote from my biology teacher, by the way. Uh, So, like, usually people get like C's or something. We have a 1 to 6 scale of grades. So, instead of letters, we use numbers, and 1 is the worst, 6 is the best. So, oftentimes, professors will say, you do not get a 6 no matter what. And then when you translate it to the 4.0 scale, it's like a 3 point something when you get a 5. So, like, it doesn't look that well, but like, nobody else got, a higher grade. Also, one of my professors just straight up told me that they don't like me because I'm going to America. And she said she'll, like, on purpose lower my grade, which is like true story. And technically, she can do that. And then, considering like our, what's it called? The grading, like, rubric, the rules for it, there is a little bit of like area where the professor can just like move your grade just because. But luckily the recruiters in the US don't really care that much about GPA for international students. So that kind of saved me.
That's wild. The end of just, yeah, I could just mess with your grade just 'cause. That's insane.
I mean, some stuff that like goes down there would be so like unbelievably unacceptable in America that it's crazy. Well, hopefully it gets better at some point, but as far as I know right now, it's only getting worse. The curriculum was like changed nationally like last year or something, so
That's crazy. I want to dive into some of this other stuff that you mentioned just right before the whole talk about Poland. But to start off, how did you get into building rockets for NASA and the student launch competition?
Okay, so now this is gonna be a crazy one. Ever since I was 8 years old, I was fascinated with pyrotechnics and I loved chemistry. And our chemistry curriculum in Poland starts actually super early. Basically, I believe it's like in elementary school, we get something called like natural phenomena, I guess the like rough translation would be. And it's basically like geology, geography, biology, chemistry combined. And you get to like some like science, very general stuff, right? And then in middle school, so like the equivalent of a 7th grade, you actually have a subject called chemistry. And then in high school, you pick a major. And basically, mine was maths, chemistry, physics. So I had like chemistry every day in high school. So I got to do a lot of chemistry and I loved it. And one of the things I used to do since I was 8 is I ran a small pyrotechnics lab at home. So I like, when I was 8, I was just lucky that I didn't get hurt. But like in middle school, for example, I made like a liquid fueled rocket engine with like concentrated nitric acid using aniline, the oxidizer, and the fuel. Two liquids combust in a pipe, and you get like a rocket propellant moving a skateboard in my case because I didn't have anything that could fly nicely. But I would build stuff like that just in my free time as a kid. My parents allowed me to do it, which that's crazy. I wouldn't let my kid do it. I was always just fascinated by it. I was on my both element both middle schools and element and high schools chemistry Olympiad team. So we have a chemistry Olympiad that is national, and then if you win nationals, you get to go to the international one. I never won the nationals. There's just some like dudes who are machines, I guess. They could do stuff that I couldn't. And at the time, I don't think I was like really, really putting 100% of my like ability into the Olympiad itself. I guess I was just more fascinated by the like physical, like, oh, I can build stuff, that's cool type of thing, rather than, oh, I can like know things. That wasn't that like as inspiring to me as actually like putting it in practice. That was like a source of my inspiration. And then when I went to Notre Dame, I found out there's a rocketry team. So, first year as a freshman, I got somewhat involved in it. What kind of like disappointed me a lot was that we don't get to build the engines. So there wasn't like a propulsion team, because NASA safety guidelines say there's like engines we gotta buy, and then we gotta use that little part, and then we cannot even touch the engine ourselves. We gotta have a mentor who installs it, right? So that was kind of, I don't want to use the word lame because it's still a cool competition. It's a very cool competition, but it's so disappointing we don't get to build engines. And then when my interest somewhat shifted in my sophomore year, I really got interested again in rocketry, in the rocketry team, specifically for ACS, which is the system that controls the direction and the speed of the rocket flight. Basically, you have a computer on board, and it controls some of the flaps and stuff that change the direction and speed of the rocket. And there's different ways of analyzing like where you're going, where you're at right now, and all that. And that seems super interesting to me. So me and like three of my buddies were basically like the main designers of it sophomore year. And it got to fly at a NASA competition in Huntsville. And that was pretty cool.
Wow. It's crazy. I feel like some of the stuff that you're saying, like about just building stuff randomly at 8 years old, like in the US, it'd be like, I'm just like playing with Legos and you're like casually building engines and stuff for rockets and things. And then you're like, it's kind of lame that in my college, I was only able to build like the rocket and I couldn't do the engine. That's hilarious. That's so crazy.
And at the time when I was like elementary school, most of the stuff I learned was from like YouTube. Like straight up, there were just hundreds of channels. Like YouTube wasn't that censored back in the day. So they're just guys doing like crazy DIY projects, posting it, and like no safety guidelines, no anything. And I was just reproducing it somehow. It was crazy. But like I got lucky. I'm here. I got all my like fingers and everything. No chemical burns or anything. So yeah, but it was quite the adventure. And I think it kind of like sparked the flame in me where I just like became really, really like inspired and almost obsessed about building cool things.
I want to transition a little bit into what you're doing now with the Desync AI. Can you tell me more about that and how this all started up, maybe with your co-founder and whatnot?
Yeah, so my co-founder, Mark Evgenev, he was a buddy of mine since last summer. I met him through some of the like startup projects that Notre Dame hosts. Basically, Notre Dame has like help for startups, like the Idea Center or other like institutions that kind of help us accelerate the process of building a company. And at the time, I was involved in a different company, the ski navigation thing. But you know, since we met a lot of other startups, Mark was running one of them. He kind of popped out to me as like a somewhat, you know, reasonable guy. And his ideas were really interesting. He had ideas that, like, I don't know, a lot of the people that I met were giving me literally like, oh, TripAdvisor, but for like college students or something, like stuff that's just like, oh, everybody had this idea and it doesn't quite work. He had ideas that like I never thought of. And he was showing me things that I haven't seen before. For example, so I was interested in AI for a while at the time, and he kept on like talking about the prompting stuff. And for a while, I thought it's like a meme, the whole prompt engineering and stuff, up until a point where I couldn't get GPT to solve a totally not homework problem, let's call it, right? And then he had like a non-human readable prompt where it's symbols that I couldn't comprehend. Like symbols, emojis, like non-text. He puts it in there, writes some like keywords, pastes the problem, and it solved it. And I was like, oh, okay, this is real. Like that was a moment where I was like, okay, like it's actually a utility. And nowadays you can actually see like papers on it where proper prompt manipulation can provide like incredibly high quality outputs. So I was really like impressed immediately by what he's done. And that kind of opened a situation where in my free time, me and him would like hop on calls sometimes and check some like new way to leverage AI, which because he's not like a technical, not a very technical person. He kind of gets like the ideas of AI and all that, definitely more than like the average person, but he doesn't like code it himself. but he looks at it, kind of black boxes the theory of it, sees, okay, this input, this output, okay, so how can I use this in the most efficient way? And he is able to find incredible ways to use this. So when I was going to leave Skis, my previous startup, I talked to him and I was like, hey, so would you be interested in having like a technical person on board? And he was very happy. In fact, we reincorporated so that we're both founders and that we can both file 83Bs and all that. And I now do like the fine tuning of the technical element and he does the leveraging of the overall system. And it's actually going pretty well. So we started 13 days ago. We've already had like 8 clients. Our biggest client is from the UK. It's a venture capital company. We're basically, there is only so much I can say. I'm not even supposed to mention the name, but the general idea is that they are looking for specific like aspects of a company. And they had a bunch of investments previously based on their strategy of finding these like parameters for a company. And over 70 of those investments, all of them were successful. So basically they did the analysis manually. So now we're trying to teach a machine to find these parameters in companies. And we're actually using the company's house API to look for, it's the equivalent of the US SEC. And we're looking for filings of companies. We're trying to find those parameters. And if it initially fits those a set of parameters, we cannot fully populate it unless we request documents from the founders of those companies. So then we have a system where we reach out to them. They usually respond because we send it from the email of the venture capital group. And then we are able to, populate the rest. And there's a flag that pops up. And so they haven't done any investments yet because it's early stage of this project. But basically, they will invest in those automatically found companies. And they'll see if it compares well to what they did manually. And if it does, then they can scale their operations without the need for hiring analysts, which costs down, profit up. I mean, it's like best case scenario ever for them. Still really excited about it. That's like an example. We also do a thing where we basically scrape the internet for a lot of like data from venture capital groups on like what they're looking for in startups, what a pitch should look like and all that. So we have like thousands of documents on it. And we embed a lot of that into different models of AI. And, you know, a lot of people, when they use AI, they just have like language model, then send, think to language model processes, send back, right? Like that's the simplest way to use it. For us, it's more like, okay, you send it to a language model that then splits it into problems. Then it sends it to other language models that are either fine-tuned or have embeddings that make them like an expert in a small area. And then they process that little small area and then it all collapses down to like a compilation of the results and then you get a result. So you wait a little bit longer, you use a lot more resources because you're either running some of these locally, these AIs, and they cost a lot of money to run locally because you need like big GPUs and stuff. Or you use like calls for like OpenAI, which costs money. But you get a much higher quality output. So we're able to analyze people's decks practically automatically, provide criticism, and we are actually able to have an AI generate decks. That's actually one of the things we found was insane. Actually, my co-founder found that. He messed a lot with like all these product-ready AIs and how to leverage them, right? And he found that like there's ways to generate decks exactly like those, VC recommendations say. So we're able to do that. There's going to be an open beta very soon for us where we open that up automatically for people. Right now we're running like a test run with 15 startups where we want to see if we can like have it work without us touching a key on a keyboard. Because right now we've been doing it semi-manually so that people send us documents, we run it through the AI, we just like kind of look at it manually and if everything seems okay, then we send it. So we just like check the work of the AI. We want to be able to not have to check it. And we want it to just be so reliable that it doesn't fail. But that still has a little bit of an area to fix because sometimes there's little issues. But yeah. And then also our main product, our main moneymaker actually, is the outreach. So I have a AI set of AIs that crawl the web, and they basically find venture capital groups, and then they compare, then they see, okay, is this venture capital group in our database? And if not, add it to the database. If it's in the database, there's a different set of AIs that are like, oh, this VC, okay, let's find everything we can on it. Currently, we use 27 parameters to describe a VC. That's something that's constantly evolving because every new company we've worked with for the past 13 days, actually, we've already served 8 customers for that thing specifically. We were like, oh, these people are looking for other parameters for this venture capital group. We have to see if we can populate that somehow, right? So the AI basically looks at articles written about that VC, looks at, well, first of all, their website, right? And then goes to some like forums potentially and all that. And there's a different like weight scale on, I don't know, if it found a comment on Reddit that says something, it's not as valuable as if it's on the front page of the VC's website. So the algorithm that fine tunes, which data we keep and which data we discard, that's the hard thing to get right. And it's still like being tested. But honestly, the way it works right now is pretty decent, in my opinion. Although we still rely on a lot of like product-ready AIs like Perplexity or GPT, because it's just faster to run an MVP where we embed some like knowledge file for GPT rather than like grab a local language model and fine-tune it, because that costs a lot of money. But already it works pretty well, and we are aiming to transition to like full independence in terms of language models soon. Within probably a month, we will no longer use OpenAI calls. We still might use Perplexity sometimes. That's what we do.
Wow. How did you even get into learning all this AI and programming stuff? Because I feel like some of the stuff that you just talked about, like, had a good grasp of a lot of it, but some of it just flew right over my head.
So I was always somewhat interested in generative AI. Like the first time I saw GPT-3, I was like, wow, like this is amazing. This is going to change the world immediately. Like the second I saw this, I was like, this is a game changer, like so much. And like, I remember showing it to people like back when like it was new, like that people started to think, oh, I can write a homework essay with it, right? Like that's the first thing people thought of. I'm like no, that yeah, you can, but that's like the least crazy thing about it. This is like way, way bigger than we can imagine right now. And, I just became interested in it. And so this is going to sound sad, but like I barely went out for like parties for the past like year. I just worked. Like people underestimate the amount of work you're able to do in like a year, and they overestimate the amount of work they're able to do in like an evening. They'll think, oh yeah, exam on Wednesday, Tuesday night, I got it, right? But when somebody asks them, oh, how long would it take you to do, this big project? They'll say, oh, years, years. No, if it's like, if you really like make your work methodical and you really put 100% of yourself into it, you can do an incredible amount of work in a month. Like people don't realize it. And the moment people like start thinking about, tasks like these as not like issues, but rather like a challenge, when I feel challenged by like a project, I kind of like try to use my ego even like, oh, I can do this. I got this. Like, I got to show myself that I can do this. And then I'm like, okay, let's do this. And like, of course, at the beginning, when like, you're starting with AI or starting with even programming at all, you're going to suck. Like, that's normal. But being afraid of that stops a lot of people from doing it. The best way to learn something is to accept, okay, at the beginning, I'm going to be like really bad at doing this. But if I keep on trying, if I keep on putting more work in it, I'm going to get better. And people oftentimes compare themselves to like, oh, this guy is so good at this. How can I even reach this level? You shouldn't care about that. What you should care about is, are you better at it than you were yesterday? If so, good. And if so, how can you become even better tomorrow, right? And I think that I would define that as success, that every day you're getting better. Not that like you set up some goal, because I think a lot of times if you set a goal, it almost acts as a ceiling. You're like, oh, okay, up until this point, oh, what's the minimum I gotta do to reach this point? Don't think of it that way. Think of it, how can I be better than I was yesterday? Every day, think of it. And that kind of drives you to realize that there is no ceiling. And setting any like finite goal is meaningless, because you can always go better. And the only metric you should like look at is, are you improving?
I think mentioning
spend a lot of time. Yeah.
I think you mentioning the goals at the end, where you don't want to set a goal and it basically works as a ceiling. It's something that I talked to another person who's on the podcast, buddy of mine.
Quentin. Oh, okay.
He actually said that he stopped setting goals and instead he started setting milestones, because what he felt like was whenever he got to a milestone, instead of it being like, oh man, like I hit my goal, I'm done now, I don't know what to do. You hit a milestone, it's like, all right, awesome, I can celebrate a little bit and then I can move forward and continue to go to the next milestone and hit the next one. And then there's a continuous sense of progress, forward progress. And that's something that I actually started to do in my own life for different goals. I had bigger goals and sometimes I'd set like super unrealistic bigger goals. I like to start setting now realistically unrealistic goals that are like going to push me out of my comfort zone, but aren't going to be like insanely crazy that I'm not going to achieve them. And then I started implementing like milestones along the way to where I can hit these spots and be like, oh man, like I'm on the right track, I'm doing well. Now let's go after the next one. If you hit enough milestones, you'll hit that goal, which that goal will just eventually become a milestone for another bigger goal, because you're just going to keep improving daily.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. You're right. Maybe I phrased it slightly incorrectly. You're right. I meant that milestones are actually a great way to do this, but not a goal. Thinking of it as a milestone is a much better way. Yeah. So usually, like when I think of an issue, I try to disassemble it, right? A lot of times an issue might, like a high level issue, might seem super difficult on the surface. But the moment you like spend the time to sit down and be like, okay, what exactly needs to happen for this to be achieved? And my approach might be a little bit like specific to programming or tech in general, because I will literally like write out, okay, so there needs to be a piece of software that does X. How can this do this? Okay, it uses these things. Okay, what do I know about this? And then I mark things that I have no idea about. And I'm like, okay, how long would it take me to like read and find information about this to comprehend it? And like disassemble it into these little packets that like each packet you can complete in a, you know, under like 3 or 4 hours. And then if you have all of these, you can like kind of spread them out over time, and then you have like a realistic, you know, overview of your project milestones. And you know, if you set it up correctly, then once they are complete, your project is done and working. So I think it's all about like distributing your work efficiently rather than trying to like take on the whole problem all at once, right? That's usually a bad approach. I completely agree with what you say. Yeah.
How do you structure time management for yourself in college?
I'm awful. I'm awful at that. That's I don't use a calendar. I just memorize when I have things. Like this meeting today, I just remembered that at 2 p.m. I'm seeing you. It's a bad system. It's a bad system because people ask me, oh, can you send me your calendar? I'm like, I can tell you when I'm available, like by change in the future. I don't know. I don't like setting a hard, like, I gotta be, you know, doing this in this time period. Because this kind of contradicts what I said before, but I kind of do things when I feel like it. But it's not that, like, oh, I feel motivation now. It's more like, I know this has to be done. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, I would prefer to do it in a different order. And if I set up a calendar in one way, I would kind of like force myself to do it in a specific order. which, yeah, not a fan, probably would help me a lot with productivity if I actually use the calendar properly. That's something that my co-founder is like really convincing me to do right now. So yeah, my time management is usually really bad in terms of like, I don't know when, but usually I'm able to do the things that I need to in a day. And also, I think the main thing for me is reliable sleep schedule, right? Like I will wake up 8 a.m. usually, and I'll go to sleep like 11 p.m. to get like 9 hours of sleep. I think that's really important, that like you sleep same hours every day and you sleep like 8 to 9 hours, right? That kind of puts you in a place where, like, if you sleep 6 hours every day, you're like harming yourself. And some people will think, oh yeah, I get 2 more hours a day of like work or something, but the next day their productivity will not be optimal. And like, trust me, if people who like don't sleep a lot try running sleep for, you know, 9 hours every day in the same time schedule so that your circadian rhythm stays consistent, after 2 weeks, they will feel like they're invincible. It's amazing.
That's something that I've looked into as well. I've watched a bunch of different podcasts and learned a bunch about sleep and how wanting to wake up at the same time, try and get sunlight immediately to make sure that your circadian rhythm is working correctly and working for you instead of completely against you, I guess would be a good way to put it. And one of my things that I do is I try to go to sleep at the exact same time pretty much every night and wake up around the exact same time, even if it's like weekends or whatnot, and just stay in like the same habit and routine there. Do you have any other routines like outside of a sleep routine that you think contribute to more of your productivity, or are you really just doing stuff kind of whenever?
Yeah, so I'm not a gym guy or anything, but I think some sort of exercise regularly usually is really helpful. So I do calisthenics, like push-ups and pull-ups, very simple, and like, oh yeah, pull-up bar, right? And I think calisthenics is so efficient because a lot of my friends are like gym rats and they'll spend like 2 hours at the gym, right? But when you think about it, so how long does it take you to do like a set of however many reps? And then how much time are you sitting in between those sets just doing nothing, right? Whereas for me, what I'll do is like, oh, I gotta grab water from my fridge. Okay, you know, let's do 50 push-ups, boom, grab water, I'm back. 1 minute has gone by and I have already done a set, right? That is very time efficient. Same thing with the pull-up bar. I'm gonna go there. Yeah, let's do like 10 pull-ups or something. And then, yeah, I'll do the pull-up bar. I hate it. I sometimes on purpose just skip it. I don't know. Yeah, it's another like motivation issue I have, right? But I think that's a very time efficient way of doing it. And like you get to, you know, kind of stay healthy in some way. I also think running is pretty decent. Well, now in Indiana, it was really cold and yesterday kind of got warmer. But like during summer, I like to run just for a while, some cardio. And in general, I feel like this makes me way more productive if I have had like some physical activity to some degree compared to if I just like sat for a whole like day in a chair. That's usually awful. I also have once tried polyphasic sleep. Are you familiar with that?
I am not. Tell me more.
Okay, so that's like a crazy way to sleep where instead of sleeping once, so-called monophasic sleep a day, like 8 hours, right? What you can do is you can sleep like 4 times for 30 minutes. And apparently, so there's very little research around it and it could be potentially dangerous, disclaimer. So I stopped it pretty quick actually, because it's very hard to upkeep. But basically, if you very reliably every 6 hours sleep for 30 minutes, you get 2 hours of REM sleep. That's the theory around it, at least. And there are like reports of people doing it successfully. But if you are late, like 10 minutes for your 30 minutes of sleep, good luck. Like you are going to be readjusting for the next like 6-7 days. And just getting into the rhythm of polyphasic sleep, for me, it took 2 weeks. That was back when I was in Poland. The classes were online. I wasn't really showing up because I was studying for the SATs and I just needed more time. So that's when I did that. I did that for not long. very quickly I realized that, like, oh, I will go out with friends once and that's it. Like, this is messed up. Like, I cannot, because then you can only perform activities that are 5.5 hours or shorter, right? And they have to be in the exact time frame, because let's say you want to do something that's 2 hours, but then it overlaps slightly with your 30 minutes of sleep. Like, what are you going to say to your friends? Oh, guys, yeah, I gotta go sleep for 30 minutes. Like, it's crazy, right? So I stopped doing that, but that can actually save you a lot of time. And you do feel pretty rested, actually. It might just be also an illusion that you're rested. So I don't know. I didn't quite have, like, good metrics to compare my productivity back then. So might try it at some point after university when I don't have, like, classes that I gotta go to. But yeah, that's something crazy. I also think supplements are pretty good. Like, make sure you have all the, like, daily consumption of vitamins you need. Like, supplements are usually pretty good for that. If you drink caffeine, L-theanine is a really good addition. I am also a big fan of Tongkat Ali. So for some people, it might sound funny, but there's actually, like, scientifically proven ways to increase your testosterone levels through herbal supplements. And I actually test myself sometimes for testosterone levels to make sure, like, it's all good. So, like, Tongkat Ali has been shown to improve testosterone by 50 to 300 points. And I believe the metric is nanogram per liter of blood. So, like, since the averages for testosterone in males have been dropping historically from year to year, it's really good to get back to, like, the healthy level. Also ashwagandha is pretty decent. Shilajit is another one of those testosterone increasing herbal supplements, but it has new studies that say it could be nephrotoxic, meaning it damages your kidneys. So beware of that. I think it's also, like, very, like, person specific what people supplement with, right? So, like, people will just have to try it out and always, you know, do your own research, right? I am not a doctor by any means. But yeah, I think, like, there's ways that people can both through just practices of, like, doing the right thing and then chemically through the right diet plus supplements, they can really improve their, like, cognitive functioning.
Where did you learn all this stuff? Like, are you just watching YouTube videos, or are you diving in and reading scientific articles and whatnot? Where can we go to learn more about some of the stuff?
I would say a very, like a great resource that doesn't really require any high level of understanding of chemistry or biology or anything. And trust me, I don't have a high understanding of biology by any means. I'm just a chemistry guy, right? Andrew Huberman podcast. Amazing resource. I love the guy.
I love him.
Amazing, love right? Stuff. Yeah. So he has a lot of resources. For those who don't know, he's a Stanford PhD, basically has a podcast about how to use science to optimize, like, your daily activities and productivity and all that. Very, very interesting guy. Oftentimes, I'll go on YouTube and then I'll find people who mention something, and oftentimes they'll mention, like, papers associated with it. So then I go to the paper. Because the issue with YouTube is oftentimes you'll find, like, gym bros that are like, you know, oh yeah, this definitely works. And then it's like just anecdotal story from one guy, right? Like, it's not a proof of anything. So yeah, it's very important to actually look at, like, is there consensus on whether something works or not?
I find that coffee is super good for productivity. If you just get caffeine in your system, you can spike in, it can be good. I'll do that every now and then. And then what I'm doing right now is fasting. If you've ever tried fasting, I've noticed that's my ultimate productivity hack. It's just not eating anything and just drinking water. I can get absolutely locked in and work on anything. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, and I also think high protein, high fat, low carb diet, very helpful. And if you really want to go, like, fully optimal, keto diet, right? Where you eat the minimum amount of carbs so that your body, as its main fuel source, does no longer use sugars. It will use fats. And there's actually ways to test if you are in a keto state. Basically, you get like test strips. Athletes sometimes actually put themselves in keto state on purpose. But it also improves brain function. You can test if you're actually in keto state and if you're actually consuming low enough amounts of carbs by testing your urine, and it should contain fats. Like, you should be urinating fats if you are in keto state. And then you know that, like, you're in the right, like, dietary area for keto. But that requires you to, like, never eat sugar throughout the day. Like, there's a certain proportion of how much more grams of fat you need compared to grams of sugar. I don't quite remember the numbers because I'm not doing keto anymore, but I used to do it, and it was really nice. But yeah, if for some people it works amazingly. For me, it was like, okay, it was decent. But yeah, it's also another thing that people like might want to try out. Fasting myself, I did it with keto. It was nice. But I don't know. I was just hungry.
Yeah, that'll happen sometimes. I feel like you bring like a bunch of just different experiments that you just like almost try yourself and then sort of are able to speak on them. That's what I've been trying to do over the past little bit. Is there anything that you think that other people should try for either productivity or just in general? Something that is an experiment that you did in your life that just wowed you?
It's actually a good question. I think, okay, so this is going to be a wild one. Try not drinking for like half a year and see how well you feel. It's an amazing thing, right? So of course, you know, in America, alcohol is 21 years old, right? But like kids drink, of course. In Poland, alcohol is 18 years old and 16 year olds drink, right? I think a lot of the time, people who are like in college or something are experiencing the whole party thing like for the first time in their life. They're just so excited because it's something new. But honestly, like if you get through it, like it just gets boring, in my opinion, to like go out and drink compared to like build something that's really cool. That's like making you money. That's providing some incredible utility or something. Like the level of satisfaction you'll get from doing something really cool is incomparable to like, oh, going out with, I don't know, buddies on some like Tuesday or something, as some people do. I think somebody who's listening to this and hasn't ever done something like really, truly interesting, like passionate and all that, they should spend the next semester doing some project, something that you think is meaningful or potentially like lucrative in terms of like results, and try it and like go fully for it, right? And like, you know, when you get that call, hey, Saturday night, man, let's go, say, sorry, can't. Or if you're going, don't drink. And you'll see how much better you are without hangovers, without any, like, you know, negative effects on your productivity. And I feel like once you get to that area, it's almost hard to stop working. Like, I get that sometimes, where people will call me and be like, dude, I'm worried about you. You haven't gone out with us in like 2 months, you know? And I think about it in a different way. I think if I'm really determined to reach some, you know, milestone, and my like friends tell me they're worried, it's actually a good sign, because that means that my dedication levels are beyond what they would consider normal. And if you don't want like normal results, if you don't want to be like normal or average, you gotta be beyond that. You gotta put more dedication in it. You gotta go above and beyond to reach your milestones. So to me, it's almost motivating when people are like, oh, dude, are you okay? You've been working on this, you know, all day, every day. I'm like, I'm okay. Thanks for noticing. But like, I appreciate that. I appreciate the concern because they're my friends and that shows that they're good friends. But it also tells me, it's not just me thinking I'm working. I'm actually working because these people also think so. It's like a second layer of confirmation in my mind of like, I'm going the right way. I'm on track.
I've noticed that myself as well, because I think for a while, especially my freshman year of college, I didn't have any sort of like passion or purpose or whatnot that I had going on. And I just kind of sat around and laid around. And then eventually, around actually about a year or so ago, a little over a year ago, I had the idea for what eventually became this podcast and the stuff I'm building behind it. And I just really put my head down and just started like actually working the entire time. Like this past semester, I like completely more than anything beforehand, like completely put my head down and pretty much just worked the entire time. And it was the happiest I've ever been. Like I love waking up early and I still get up. I get up at like 5 nowadays. I'll probably go back to like 4:45. I usually go on Lyft, but I used to just work immediately, but it'll switch it up every now and then. But I love the feeling of actually getting up and like doing something that I'm super passionate about and working on it, like whatever that may be for me, whether that's like going and filming a podcast, editing a podcast, or working on the other stuff as well. And just going full force to try and like meet this goal, this purpose that I have. It's like such an unbelievably amazing feeling. It's like so much stuff that you have to get done and like balancing that a little bit with school, of course, and like courses, and then all the rest of the stuff like reading and just taking in other information, fitness and whatnot. Balancing all of that, it seems like it'd be crazy hard and like super stressful, but it's like the best time like ever, the best feeling ever. I'm glad somebody else I now know like has some sort of confirmation. It's like, yeah, work hard. Like it's fun. It's actually good for you to do.
It's the most fun thing I've ever done in my life. And I always say, be delusional. And this sounds funny, but be delusional. If you have something that you really, really want, be delusional. Don't let something discourage you. There's an issue, solve it. Don't see issues, see challenges that you have to overcome. See opportunity, right? I don't know. Let's say my ski navigation app, right? We lost the contract. Good, more time to get better, right? Jocko Willings, the ex-Navy SEAL guy, has a great like speech on that. Something bad happens, good. We have more time to prepare. You know, oh, we get the good gear, good. We can get, you know, more practice on the old set. Like, something bad happens, good. You have an opportunity to get better, get more prepared, you know. Don't ever think of something as like, oh, it's terrible. Just look at facts, look at what you can do with them, and then do the best thing. And then trust yourself. Look at other people's opinions, but remember they're not your opinion. And then make your own judgment, and then go for it 100%. And then you will not feel bad about it at all if you're truly honest with yourself.
That reminded me of a couple of things. The first one is this book that I'm just starting to read now. It's called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. Basically what I've looked at like into it overall. I'm reading it like fully now, but it was super interesting to me because it basically is talking about like the obstacles and the things that are actually in the way are going to promote more forward progress from you by actually like facing them instead of just turning around, just walking away, basically just quitting, because you learn nothing from just randomly quitting the entire time. But whenever you face that obstacle head on and really move it out of the way and then move to the next one, that's whenever you're making forward progress. That's whenever you're growing and you're going to get closer to these milestones that you set for yourself that you really want to hit. I feel like just switching your perspective in the sense of like these things are like they're tough, but they're happening for a reason, because something that I really believe is the fact that like all these things that you've had in the past have made you into the person who you are today. And actually, I think it's Alex Hormozi, his quote, where he talks about
the guy.
I love Alex Hormozi. One of the things was, I think it was from him, but it was, if you were to like make a person or whatnot who was all the way like super successful and whatnot, you wouldn't have them just make it like, you wouldn't just make it like super easy for the people. Like you'd give them like challenges to face so they can become that one person who they want to be, that super successful person. And it's something that you need to realize, and that I started to realize, is if you want to be that person who's like super successful, you got to do all the different things that like get you to there. It's like one of the things that I always said was, I need to, during my 20s, I want to, you know, like work really hard and whatnot, and like set up the rest of my life so like it's okay, and like I'll be in the position where I want to be. And then I turned 20 and I was like, all right, you know, like you got to like do it now, like put in the work and like actually get to where you want to go. Like this is the time whenever you have to like actually do it. And it's accepting that and realizing, like switching your perspective, like this is the opportunity. You have the opportunity right now to become great, to be exceptional, to do what you want to do, be passionate about the things that you want to be passionate about, and make the make your life better for your future. You just have to actually do it now. It's like nobody else is going to do it for you. Go for it. See it as an opportunity. Push yourself forward. And then so that you can look back and be like, man, I did all that stuff. I'm so thankful that I was able to do it. And I'm doing that now where I realize something for other things I'm building. And it's like, because of the actions that I took in August that I didn't even realize were going to like help me out, or even further back, actions I took like a year and a half ago that set up right now for me to be on the call with you or to be building the other stuff. It's like, man, I'm so thankful that I just put in the time. And yeah, it was crazy hard. And this applies to anything, like whether that has to do with, you know, building like a business or building out whatever it is that you're doing or anything that you're passionate about, but just even like hard things like studying an extra 30 minutes this past Tuesday for the test that you have coming up, that's already building upon it. And it was an opportunity that you were able to be able to go and study. And then now you're able to do better in the future. It's just thinking about it from like a lens of more delayed gratification, to where I'm going to put in some work now and then we'll be able to get it. I'm going to get rewarded for it later. And I think that just switching your perspective from that way and seeing things as opportunities, I love that. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And there's a quote, I don't remember who said it. It's an old quote. A guy says to his friend, like, I want to make $1 million. And it was like the 80s or something. And then his friend says, well, that's a very materialistic goal, you know, just doing stuff for money. But then he responds, no, I don't want to do it for $1 million. I want to do it for the person I'll have to become to make $1 million, right? And I think that's the true value, that if you take on enough challenges to achieve those high goals, you become a person who is kind of on a different level once you, you know, achieve that compared to where you were before. And that's the true value. You grow as a person rather than that you gain material gain or something. I think it's more of a journey of like growth that is the true value of it all. So I think that's a really also good way to look at it.
I think it's about just growing in your own life, because there's always people who have like different expectations for you all the time. Like a good example of this might be your parents, where they might want you to go to one school or do something or whatnot, but only you know who you are and who you want to become. And I think taking time to just really reflect on that and really, you know, sit down and ask yourself, like, what do I actually want? Like, where do these desires stem from? And then once you figure out like around what you want to do, it's just like taking action and doing the things that are going to make you into the person who got the things that you want. And it's a small steps of like little by little every single day to be able to, you know, go and become this person, because you don't just become the person overnight. There has to be some sort of a process. And it's tough in the beginning, but it's like, I think this is another Alex Hormozi thing where it's just like, start sucking right now so that you'll be good at the thing later.
Yep. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step.
Exactly. All right. Little rapid fire. Last couple things here, because we are coming up on.
Oh, yeah. Time.
I just looked at that. But a couple of things. What are a couple of books or resources or podcasts, whatnot, you would recommend for undergrads to read if they want to become a lot more exceptional? We'll start with there.
If you're running a startup, there is three books that I would recommend the most. First one, which might sound funny, is The Art of War by Sun Tzu. He was a Chinese general thousands of years ago, And the book is literally about ancient warfare tactics, if you read it on the surface. But once you dig into it, it's the most brilliant piece of literature I have ever read. And it's, I think, the only book that I have read over 10 times. I actually have like an Obsidian Notes notebook where every time I read it, I just add more stuff. And then I add like notes about my personal life and how it kind of relates. Another book, even more controversial, 48 Laws of Power. Phenomenal book. Gives you a perspective on how people think, how the people you work with can respond to different things in ways you didn't expect, and in general on how to win, because you want to win. And another book would be The Prince by Machiavelli. It's, I know these picks are very controversial, but very, very good books. And of course, read them with a grain of salt. And then remember that in the end, it's always better to be a good person in the long term, even though, you know, some of these things there say to do bad things. In general, in long term, if you are not like an honest business partner or something, you end up losing the long term opportunities. But these books give you a perspective on how like other people might be looking at certain situations, and they let you somewhat preventatively act to like, I don't know, not lose your shares or not terribly fumble a business deal because somebody was dishonest or something, right? So they give you like a perspective on like I like to say that, you know, companies and in general like equity in them is big boys game, right? If you didn't notice a like small annotation of a legal document, that's it. Like it's big boys game. Nobody's gonna be sorry for it. You gotta notice it. So it kind of gives you a perspective of how meticulous you gotta be in some business dealings to come out on top. And it gives you a perspective on what kind of plays and moves and motivations there can be for a lot of stuff. And I think these books are in a way very general because they don't really like 48 Laws of Power brings up a lot of specific examples, but like The Art of War doesn't really, unless you get some like extended version. Like the original doesn't. It just goes very general. But the moment you realize that this general like outline of it can apply to very specific cases, once you like translate these like ancient scenarios to like modern day reality, you realize, oh wait, there's like so many parallels. And I think that's, really useful. Also, if you build tech and AI, get some interesting book on like probabilities. Like, I don't know, I have a blackjack card counting book. This one is just called Blackjack Strategy, and it gives you like an idea of how, or like if you're a quant trader or something, like look at situations like the early, like if you want to become a quant trader or something, look at the early times of like when people were figuring out how to beat random games, how to beat random events, and how you can basically look at a series of random events, and in general, you can you can create a strategy that in some cases, because not always, only on games where positive EV can be created, you can like beat systems that seem random, seem unbeatable. Where if you analyze every element of it and you assign numerical values to it, you can beat so many systems by just being smart about it. And that kind of gives you a perspective on like these are very structured, things where things happen in a very specific way, but in the real world, there's oftentimes situations where you think, okay, well, I have these two decisions. I can assign a rough probability of it and a rough value to it. And then when you think in these, in terms of these parameters, you can kind of make a really good decision oftentimes.
Oh, awesome. I've heard of all of those, and I'm definitely going to check them out. Haven't been able to read them yet, but yeah, I'm excited. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, Max. I appreciate you taking your time, and I learned a bunch of things. Super inspiring, a lot of the stuff. I wish you the best. I'm sure that we'll be in touch as well now that I
Sure,
have got
yeah.
you. I'm going to be bouncing random ideas off of you. I'll be like, hey, how can
Yeah.
I prompt ChatGPT to do this? You'll be like, I got you.
I'd love to help. Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed another episode of Exceptional Undergrads. If you found inspiration in today's episode, just head on over to our website, exceptionalundergrads.com, for show notes as well as all resources from today's episode. We're always looking for a new undergrad to feature on the podcast. So if you'd like to be featured, go to our Apply Here page on the website, fill out the application, and we'll get back to you. And as always, guys, stay exceptional.